Hello, I'm Samantha Goldman, an occupational therapist and a post-professional occupational therapy doctoral student at Boston University. I am interviewing today with Dr. Michael Pizzi, who is an occupational therapist and wellness lifestyle coach. Dr. Pizzi is also a professor at Dominican College and is the founder of the Touching Humanity charity. He has been an occupational therapy practitioner for 38 years. So, Dr. Pizzi, I was hoping you could start with telling us a little bit about your mission as an occupational therapist.
My mission is to make sure people are enabled in life to do what's meaningful to them that promotes their quality of life. I think that's a missing piece to what we do as occupational therapists. And to me, that's what needs to be changed in the profession, is we need to focus more on well-being and quality of life issues, not so much on can people walk 100 feet.
Yeah, absolutely. And like we were talking about before, a lot of occupational therapists need to look a little bit more holistically at the whole person.
Right. Oh, yeah. And we say we work holistically, but for example, in the case of childhood obesity, we do not treat children holistically, because if we truly did, we would pay attention to other issues related to their handwriting versus just their ability to form a letter. We would pay attention to their, if their fingers are too chubby, for example, as mine were when I was a kid. I didn't have developmental coordination problems. I was just overweight. And so those kinds of things impact, for example, the very small activity of handwriting. However, these kids who are in school, they're often bullied, and they're often denigrated and not chosen for the team, if you will. And what that does to a child's psyche can be pretty profound for the whole of their life. And so OTs need to pay much more attention to the mental health aspects of these children, as well as the mental health aspects of their parents, who are probably very frustrated that they feel they have no control over the situation. And I think that we can afford them that control and empower them to take control of the situation versus having weight, for example, control them and their daily activities.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And you've had a really large part in advocating for occupational therapy in addressing health and wellness. Are there any certain policies, regulations, or payment structure rules that you think are limiting OTs in starting in this practice area?
Everything. Pretty much everything. Many years ago, I created a workshop called The Entrepreneurial You. And I did it purposefully to sort of educate, much like Karen Jacobs has done her whole career, who I've always admired. I really believe that we need to be more entrepreneurial, and we need to be able to say, I am worth $100 for a treatment session. But we're so afraid of doing that, A, and B, we're so reliant on third-party payers that it limits what it is we actually value as a profession. And I think that is one of the saddest things about our profession, that we don't advocate for ourselves enough and feel worthy enough to say, I'm worth that, and I'm going to do this in my practice, and this is what I need to charge, and this is why.
Right. Have you seen a little bit about that cash-based practice that's emerging now for OT?
No.
There's a whole group starting now on Facebook about cash-based OT and advocating for our services out of third-party payers, which is kind of cool.
Well, that's the only way we're going to really advocate for ourselves, unless we continue with this policy stuff. We've been dealing with policy issues for decades. We contribute money to PAC, AOT PAC. We look for policy changes all the time, and yet very, very, very incremental changes are happening in the last two decades. And I think that speaks volumes for how we need to proceed outside of the third-party payment system. And we have to start saying, these are my services, this is what it's worth, and thank you so much.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that'd be really great for us to move in that direction.
Yeah.
And so what are some of the most important lessons you think you've learned as an occupational therapist?
Lessons I've learned? Goodness, I've been an OT for 38
years. A lot of lessons.
Lessons. I always teach my students that you have the privilege of working with people simply because they came to you because they are ill. And So you need to honor that relationship because you would never have met that person otherwise. So get to know the human being behind the illness and you will get to know life.
Yeah, I think that's so important too. And I think probably for your treatment sessions, you'll see a lot more people returning and being engaged in your treatment sessions if you get to know them at that level.
Well, yeah, everybody has an authentic life story. And wouldn't it be fascinating to find out who these people are? Not just how to treat them, but who they are as people. I mean, I've met some amazing, amazing people just because of offering occupational therapy services. And so I think that's probably the biggest lesson I've learned is you need to get to know human beings as people before you get to know them as a patient.
Right. And correct me if I'm wrong, you are doing online OT or telehealth, occupational therapy and wellness services?
I just started a business where I created a health and wellness assessment. And so I'm putting it online. And I'm going to be able to, and it's a cash business. Where people will register and they will get the assessment and then we'll go over the assessment. And it's different than counseling and it's different than traditional occupational therapy. It's more wellness coaching for people using my OT skills. And so what I plan to do is really reach out to people and make sure that I don't see them forever, because that's not my goal.
Mm-hmm.
But rather make it very goal oriented and sort of, you and I were talking about what sparks joy in your life, what makes you happy, and those are the kinds of questions I'll be asking people to see and how it impacts their health and wellness. So it's a very occupation client centered way of approaching things so that we understand their perceptions of their health and how their perceptions are actually influencing their occupational participation.
That's amazing. And so I think that some congratulations are in order for you and your short film, Wan Song.
You saw it on Facebook.
I did. I had a chance to watch it. It's amazing.
It's amazing. And that's a great example of being sort of entrepreneurial,
yes,
but at the same time doing something that's charitable and meaningful and important, not just for myself, because it is, but for the families that I interact with. In fact, I just came from a meeting with an award-winning composer lyricist team who are going to be working with me on my Welcome Next project. And from that, we develop a concert, a musical, and ways, really creative, innovative, different ways of advocating for occupational therapy, but in a way that's meaningful, that gives voice to the voiceless, which is what this project called the Well Songs Project really does.
Yeah, it was really amazing to watch him sing and to watch him play the drums, all these things that you had mentioned in the film, people didn't really know about until you started interviewing him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we interviewed him to just write a song for him. But the interview became so much more. And then when my composer wrote this beautiful song at the end, he had the idea, what if Juan actually sang the song himself? And Juan, being blind, actually learned the song. You know, he stood there with a music stand. However, he was blind, and he just sang his heart out. It was eye-opening and tear-jerking at the same time.
Yeah, it was really amazing. And so that's been accepted to the Golden Door International Film Festival?
Yeah, right here in New Jersey. So I'm pretty excited about that. Yeah.
Congratulations. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. So, in terms of entrepreneurial work, in terms of wellness work, in terms of OT, all of my training as an OT has informed all of these kinds of projects. And these projects, to me, advocate for the profession, but they also advocate for looking at health, well-being, and quality of life of individuals in a very non-traditional way.
Right.
I think OTs need to use performing arts more in their practices, because I've seen remarkable things happen with kids. I created a special needs Broadway camp that we do every year. And this past year, we had 14 kids. And the things that those parents tell me happen for their children in just 5 days is remarkable. That they're talking more, that they're reading more, that they're behaving differently, that they have this increase in music and dance that they never had before, and the parents had no idea about, all because we gave them an opportunity to express themselves.
Yeah, so you're seeing the one thing changed everything in their entire life.
Yeah, and all it took was 5 days.
Wow.
You know, so to me, you know, how these children have occupational therapy once or twice a week for, I don't know, 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we help to transform these kids' lives differently in 5 days. So I think that we're missing the boat if we don't start looking outside of our toolbox and start adding to our toolbox. I mean, back in the, 30s, 40s, 50s, we used all those art forms and we gave it all away.
Right.
So attached to the medical model that we have never looked back, and we are struggling to get it back, really struggling. And when I grew up in OT, I was trained 76 to 80 at Elizabethtown College, and we had all these craft classes, and we had all these opportunities to explore different ways of using occupation, and we've lost it. We've just lost it.
And so what recommendations would you have to other people who want to head into this area and want to be agents of change the way that you have? What would be your recommendations to start heading back in the right direction?
Think outside the box. If you work in a clinic that only does hand bikes, get out.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not going to help anybody. if you're gonna work in a school system where all they do is handwriting, get out, because that's not going to help anybody. So I really think that what we need to do is advocate for, we need to advocate for social change. That's one thing. And if we don't advocate for more social participation of more people across populations and diagnoses, then we're missing that boat. We also need to advocate more for mental health issues. And do what? Mental health, not mental illness. We need to teach mental health in our curriculum, not mental illness, because that way we can work with many millions and billions more people, not just the mentally ill. There's a place for us working mental illness, all well and good, but we're missing the boat by not addressing, for example, the number one mental health problem in America, depression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think we do a very good job of identifying that, working with it, preventing it. And how do we prevent depression, for example? Engage people in meaningful occupation.
Right.
I mean, period. I mean, it really is, period. I mean, that should be on CNN.
Yeah, it's funny because we forget that sometimes, especially on a, you know, global level.
Yeah. And so what we need, Samantha, is we need more practitioners to engage in basic clinical research. If you have 10 clients, give them to an academic who does research and work together, you know, because then you have a research study. And the more research research we can produce about that, because that's what people are going to look at. They're not just going to look at one or two anecdotes. They're going to look at, so what do you have to back this up? Well, I have this, this, and this to back this up. You know?
Right. I love the idea of pairing up with somebody in academics.
Of course. I mean, we've been talking about this for decades, but nobody's doing it. Very few people are doing it.
Right.
And it's insane to me. If you're really concerned about an issue, then collect the data and work with an institution that has a researcher. And it doesn't even have to be an OT. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's the other outside-the-box thinking we have to do. We think we have to stay within our own profession. Oh, my God, I've been screaming about that for decades. No, you don't. You have to collaborate. You have to work together in order to build a better world, a better future for patients.
Yeah,
from
I think...
all of us, actually, because at some point we're all going to be a patient.
Yeah, that's true. But I think that's great, and I think it's really important for us who are still kind of emerging in the field to learn that. And I thank you so much for your time today. I think we're right at about our 15 minutes, so I'm going to turn off the recording, but I'd love to continue to pick your brain if that's okay.
I do have like